Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Surprise! That's what we're talking about. Surprise! And so, okay. Now, anyway, hey, this program's live. This is not a rerun. Let's see if I was really, really an SOB. I would have made sure to do a canned program that said, this program's live, not a rerun. And it would be a rerun. But I'm not that. I'm not that guy. This program's live. It's the 9th day of April, 2018. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. This, of course, no, it's under repair. Headon.live is, of course, where we live. And that is where you go for access to the chat room and for access to the things we need to keep the program on the air. And with that in mind, I would encourage anyone and everyone to do that, because we didn't quite finish fundraising last week because, well, I kind of went to pieces on Friday. Well, I didn't. A molar did. And with that in mind, okay, let me just explain. I was supposed to be in D.C. this week. I really wanted to be in D.C. this week. I'm not in D.C. this week. And that is because, in fact, I shattered a molar, and it caused me tremendous and, in fact, grievous pain, and made the side of my face blow out, and hurt like a zombie gun. Trying to get the B word out of my vocabulary there. Just working at it, working at it. So that being the case, I stayed home. I took the rental car back, stayed home. Because I did not want to be in a hotel anywhere near Washington, D.C., feeling like I felt on Friday and Saturday. I did, however, get into my system some antibiotics that were prescribed for me by the physician. Had to make a doctor's office run. Pricey affair. They don't do that whole thing where you come, hey, doc, I need some antibiotics, and they just pick up the phone and call the pharmacy for you. Oh, no. No, you got to pay the VIG. And so I went and had a $100 doctor's office visit to get a little prescription for clindamycin, and started on that. And so I'm on my fourth day of a 10-day course on that. And that means that, and of course, the dentist won't touch me until I'm done with the course of antibiotics, because they don't want all that proud flesh or anything to deal with, and at least that's what they've said. So I'm here for the week, unless something shocking develops or the side of my face blows back out. That's where we are. I'm frustrated. My colleague is in D.C. working by himself. Not that he can't handle it, but, well,
we work better as a team. Now, why in the hell did that happen? Just got, okay. Just got kicked out of the chat room for a minute, and now I'm back in. Right now, it's just me and Asa in the chat room because nobody knew I was going to be here. Because, frankly, I didn't want to commit to something and then run the risk of having it go sideways again and you know, me behind the microphone like I was on Friday going, oh, it's terrible. Okay, there's Darlene in Connecticut. I figured you'd be at the mic. I know you wanted to be in D.C. this week, but I'm glad you're at the mic, Bob. Feel better. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you very, very kindly. The real pain in the ass part of all this is the waiting around for things to get better enough to go and dig around inside my jaw and yank this son of a bitch booger out. That word is really ubiquitous as an expletive, isn't it? So I can hurt some more. Yay! But all that, this is not the Bob's woe and misery hour. No, not by any stretch of the imagination. I just figured you'd, why in the hell's Bob? But no. And then, of course, there are the people who, despite the fact that for 2 weeks I've said I wouldn't be here, there are those who are going, well, of course he's here. He's always here. Yeah. So we've got some cussing and carrying on to do tonight. I did put out a tweet saying I'd be here. And I don't know if anybody picked it up and ran immediately over to turn on their computer interface. Who's this Mahwatsitses? But I'm here. And let me just do something real quick. Make sure the notification goes out on Facebook. No, not that. Don't you hate it when your screen moves? Okay, there. We should be good. Right. Okay. Anyway, my colleague is working in D.C. this week. I will be trying to participate at a distance in a meeting on Thursday. For some of what we were working on. But we've got a Moran Monday to deal with. We've also got thanks to send out. I don't know, low volume, muffled, fuzzy. I mean, it's either that or get a bunch of, ooh, you clipped messages. So, you know, six of one, half dozen of another. Sorry, Scott. Turn up your device. From the department of it could be worse. Laurel tells me, Bob, I find myself currently laid up in the hospital with a heart blockage, and I was supposed to be launching a house campaign this week. That's on hold for now. Well, attend to the heart blockage, Laurel, and you've got it a lot worse than I do. So our thoughts are with you. Absolutely. Thank you. The blue hen on Twitter said, Bob, you sound fine. I don't feel fine. But like I said, we got thanks to send out because we have subscribers. And let us do that post-haste. For instance, for the ninth day of any given month, as long as they stick around, we have thanks to send out to Kathleen in Minnesota and to Khalil in Texas and to... Our buddy Brother Deacon Gerald just down the mountain here in almost level West by Cole Trump Genia-stan. Thank you. You are partial sponsors of this program this evening. Then, of course, we have... just a minute. There we are. We have 4 subscribers for the 8th day of the month. And thanks go out to Nancy in Virginia, as well as to Tom in Pennsylvania, and Marcia in Oregon, and finally Dwayne in Pennsylvania. So that's a total of 7 partial sponsors. And then we will add to it with Saturday's partial sponsors, namely Reed in California, and our buddy of longstanding, Dr. Allen, down in Texas. Okay, so that's all. Those are the sustaining subscribers who every month, same time every month, keep the program on the air, or help keep the program on the air, and provide about a week's worth of funding for the broadcast. Thank you all very kindly, one and all. And again, since maybe this was an unplanned week of broadcasting, I'll take another minute and just say, again, if we could get $410 a month subscribers, or the equivalent of that, then all mentions of fundraising just go away. And so we are, 300 and change away from it. So that's where that goes. I mean, that's what that's about. There's a Patreon campaign. Access to both becoming a subscriber, kicking in via PayPal, and the Patreon campaign are all at headon.live. And that makes it easy. The Patreon campaign's handy if you don't like if you're particularly unfond of PayPal, because that's not connect, you know, no, that's just Patreon. Heck, for those of you who despise both, there's even Venmo. But that's sort of a specific thing. If you want to use Venmo, holler at me. I don't know much about it, and so, well, I mean, you get the idea. Well, goody. I got a response on the Facebook post. I just said, surprise, I'll be on air. And there's our buddy Fab, the founder of the Fab machine that makes this program happen every evening, saying, yay! Well, yeah. I mean, I'm happy to be here. It's the trips are not particularly easy, but the work is necessary. Like I said, the bloom went off the rose of going to D.C. a long time ago. There are still a couple of places I'd like to see. You know, one of those places is, it's not even in D.C. If you use Google Earth and you follow north up I-81, and I'm sure it's private property, so I'd probably get shot or something, but there is, as you pass over... Oh, God, what's the name of the creek? But it's near Edinburgh, Virginia, which sits off of I-81 on, what is it, US 11 or something? But sitting right by the side of the highway, as you're going north on 81, just across the creek, you'd miss it if you weren't paying attention. There is a ruin of an old wooden structure. And there's several of these along the highway. Old farmhouses and stuff that have just fallen into disrepair and ruin. And for some reason or another, maybe it's the Lauren Isley that I read as a young man, or perhaps it's the archaeology that I studied, or the history that I love. I look at that building and I think, one of these days, I gotta just find a way to get there and just poke around and try to find out what the heck that was, because it's a really unique looking building. Like maybe it was a parsonage or a church or something. And then the interstate came through and completely changed the landscape. But it sits down there by the creek, and it just cries out for attention. And you can't have a building like that that doesn't have some sort of history. So, I don't know, one of these days. But anyway, it's Moran Monday, and just to tell you where we stand, we finished the program at like $336 to go last Friday, and that's where we stand now to finish this week, $336. So, here's the interesting part. You know how much I love doing fundraising free radio. If we actually raise ordinary fundraising this week, plus the $136, if we were to do that, then we would have 2 weeks of fundraising free radio in the month of April. I don't know if that means as much to you as it does to me, but it is a delight to simply thank people instead of constantly having to mount, you know, we've got this goal. I despise it. So, with your kind indulgence, I'll go ahead and mention the fundraising goal this week, and then next week, and the week thereafter, the remainder of April, we will have fundraising free radio. So so we will start this evening at $336. $336, plain and simple. No, it's not simple at all, because I can't do 33.6 at 10 and 10 at $33. Well, I can do the 10 at $33.60, but you get the idea. That's probably not going to happen this evening, because nobody knew to expect me to be on the air this evening. So, you know, well, it's probably a hell of my own making. Anyway, that's the plan. So that having been said, let's stop with all this front-end shilly-shallying and move into the core of the program, because it is in fact Moran Monday. Oh yes, yes, it is so Moran Monday.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land, you know, morons.
Hurry, 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 step right up, you will not believe your ears, it's Moran Monday on the horn. Here, just a few short steps off the carnival midway, we've got them all for you. We've got birchers, deathers, birthers, ninthers, tenthers, booger eaters, libertarians, maggots, crumpanzees, republicans, libertarians, I said them twice, well, they're twice as awful. We've got the entire right-wing panoply for you, here behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, presented for your amazement, for your horror, for your shock, and occasionally for your laughter on Moran Monday, the Moran Monday tent. Yes, indeed, the Moran Monday tent is for everybody. It's almost kid-friendly. And in point of fact, you can just take a little walk away from the Carnival Midway, where just scant moments ago you were throwing ping-pong balls at goldfish bowls, trying to win a little tiny iguana that'll turn into like a 15-foot iguana if you keep it and treat it right, and probably eat you in your sleep. Yes, yes, yes. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. But the way it does work out, for less than 16 cents per hour of programming, you get, for the average $10 contributor on a monthly subscription basis, you get it all. You get every bit of the programming, and what a bargain by Grapthar's Hammer, yes. So, a gentle warning as you march up to the thin cybernetic veil of canvas in the entryway into the Moran Monday tent, keep a close hand on wallets, purses, watches, keys,
Children, pets, yes, even the iguana that you won throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls, and European messenger bags, because the morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. I am kind of glad I'm here this evening, because, oh, we got morans. And I don't, have we ever had an instance in which, in which the lead moran was darling, the lovely, the talented, the beautiful, the lusted after by her father, Ivanka? Yeah. Well, we do now. Ivanka Kushner, Ivanka Trump Kushner, has entered history as one of our lead morans, a nominee for Moran Monday on the Horn. She's a full-grown woman, so she is absolutely fair game for this nomination. Her nomination today stems from a tweet that she made yesterday, in which she said, "We need to promote healthy lifestyles for America's youth." In a recent survey, millions of U.S. children reported that they did not once participate in any of over 100 sports or activities listed. Hashtag youth sports at Aspen Institute. Oh, well, it's the Aspen Institute, is it? Mm-hmm. Well, see, once upon a time, and way back when I was just a little baby hillbilly, they used to run PSAs. If you're of a certain age, do you remember these things? They used to run PSAs for something called the President's Council on Physical Fitness. And they encouraged kids to participate in this program where they would do these series of physical activities and get like a patch or something, and you'd be a certified member of the President's Council on Physical Fitness, right? Well, later on, that got changed to a name that was considerably more Orwellian. But it went on existing for quite some time. And in point of fact, it existed right up until about January the 17th. Or January the 20th, 2017. The President's Council, which is no longer the President's Council, it's like the President's Council on Health and Activity or something like that, has not a single member. Not one. No surprise, I suppose. But still sad. But the thing is, the lovely and lusted after by her daddy, Ivanka, tweeted about this. Because they're in whatever godforsaken tower that she lives in,
Sanctuary,
yes, darling, yes. living there under the bells, Ivanka is, according to Agnes. Oh, great, thanks, Scott and Punky. Never mind the previous sound check email. Poorly connected patch cord on the end. Sorry. That patch cord goes a long damn way. No, little Ivanka lives in her precious, privileged world where she doesn't really know what the little people do, and every now and then she sits down to a full course meal of peasant under glass. When she's not playing Barbie scientist, that's right, Agnes. And she doesn't really know much more than her father.
who knows nothing at all, about how this country used to function. For instance, the President's Council. She tweeted that, completely oblivious to the existence of said council, and oblivious to a lot of other things as well. Like the fact that entering the office of the President of the United States on January 20th, 2017, Geezer Disgustus, her daddy, who, when arising in his sweaty, greasy, adipose jiggling form from atop Stormy Daniels, once said, "You were great. You remind me of my daughter, Ivanka." Yeah. Don't, Agnes.
That's
just
creepy.
Don't.
That
well, yes,
so
it's creepy. And he said it, and he said it to the playmate. That, yeah, you were great. You remind me of my daughter,
creepy.
Ivanka.
I mean, that's Uncle Pervy. You lock him up, right?
Yeah. A bunch of people with IQs just barely above freezing made him president. And some people who should have been smarter did too. But you know.
How's that tax break going?
Well, no, I mean, Jill Stein was a very compelling and telegenic
Leave it alone. Walk away.
Yeah. Okay.
Breathe out. Breathe in.
Letting go now. Letting go now. We're not giving birth.
Pretty
letting
much.
Everything go. I'm staring. I got my hands in the proper position, and I'm staring at my navel. And,
no, we're giving birth, but it's a turd, and it flows.
Om, mani padme om. Didn't help. But anyway, Ivanka has apparently forgotten. That's how we say it here in the hills. Ivanker. Of course, if you're Chekhov, you would say Iwanka, which may be how Trump says it when he's thinking about her. Iwanka. But, yeah, every single healthy initiative that was put in place for kids over the course of the 8 years when that one was in our White House, well, they're all gone because they were associated with that one who was in our White House. Yeah. And things like, do you remember how, and this is pre-Trump, this is before Trump even announced his candidacy, okay? This is what I mean when I say that we run the risk of deluding ourselves when we think that every rotten thing that's happening in America today happened exclusively and solely as a result of the arrival of Donald J. Trump. Do you remember back during the 8 years of the Obama administration? Do you remember when Michelle Obama wanted to plant a garden? And do you remember when she wanted to teach children to make healthy dining choices? You know, reduced sodium, lowered fat content, things that are kind of universally agreed as being dietarily, nutritionally beneficial, fresh foods over processed foods, that kind of thing. And do you remember how all the right-wing haters, and by that I mean the people, the broadcasters, you know, your flush phlegm balls and sitting there jiggling in his chair. My friend, she's trying to turn us into food fascists. That's right, my friends. She doesn't want us to eat hamburgers anymore. Blah, blah, blah. Hand me another handful of those pills that I sent the help out to get. She's turning America into some sort of European sissy state. Because she wants our children to eat healthy. Eat your broccoli, Barack. Because that went on for years. Before there was ever so much as even a hint of Donald Trump running for the presidency. (sighs) Yeah, because I do. I remember all that. They're tearing up the sacred grounds of the White House, where Andrew Jackson once whipped his slaves to plant what? A vegetable garden? What has happened to America? We've lost our patriotism amongst all of this Kenyan vegetarianism. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure Mark Levin was doing something similar, and Hannity was having a different Obamagasm. But, yeah. But Ivanka wants to make sure that children participate in the javelin throw and lawn darts and maybe yachting.
There are millions of children out there who have never experienced the joys of yachting.
I love yachting. I wish I could have experienced the joys of yachting, but I grew up in Alabama. The closest I got was canoeing. Now I live in a place where I could, if I were so inclined, learn kayaking, and I'm thinking about that this summer, but I'm not a kid. But you can go and rent a kayak and go over and just paddle around on flat water on Somersville Lake, and Agnes and I have been talking. We've decided that we would like to do that. If one had a lot of stamina, one could paddle the bejesus out of a kayak over to where the US-19 bridge crosses over Somersville Lake, and I am told that there is one hell of a walleye hole there. Absolutely, Silent R. Lamar. Stop telling us how to live longer, Bob. Mm-hmm. I know. Yes, Darlene, isn't she a delight? Isn't she wonderful? Note coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. Your wife, Agnes, I love her. Everyone does. Everyone does. I suspect if I ran a poll of listeners to the horn, who do you love? You know, who do you love, Bob or Agnes? Oh, we like Bob well enough. We love Agnes. Yeah. But no, Ivanka, clueless. And then there's a little something that the Secretary of Agriculture. Good old boy from Georgia, and they know about some agriculture in Georgia. Name of Sonny Perdue. Used to be the governor of Georgia, didn't he? Well, he's Secretary of Agriculture now. Probably building himself a big old double secret probation, soundproof booth. I mean, you know, if EPA administrator can have one, Sonny gonna want one. Got to keep everybody happy. It's like children. You know, you bring home a present for one, you got to have a present for everybody. Everybody get a cone of silence here. But one of the signature accomplishments of Michelle Obama, and wouldn't it be fun? We can at least just fantasize about this, I think. Wouldn't it be fun just to imagine Michelle Obama walking up and slapping the snot out of Sonny Perdue? You did what? Yeah, because Sonny pretty much decided to de-Obamify the standards set forth for healthy lunches at school. Yeah, really. Not a joke. Because we were going to Michelle Obama, who you must remember, Republicans used to refer to as an ape, or Michael Obama, and would swear, I ran the clips. Ah, she's really a man. She's a transsexual, and had hissies about her wearing sleeveless dresses. Oh my God, the Republic is falling. But she worked hard to try to get better standards put in place for the nutritional quality of school lunches, not just purely because having nutritional school lunches is a good thing for the future health and well-being, of the nation's children, but because for far too many children in the nation, their school lunch, and yes, school breakfast, are the only decent meals they get. For years, I've sat in seminars and so forth where we talked about, where people who do this would talk about, and it's been talked about on this program too, teachers, working with other people who wanted to be involved in it, preparing backpacks of food for their young scholars to take home with them on the weekend so that they could continue to eat food over the weekend and then come to school and not be half-starved and incapable of learning, because nothing makes for difficulty learning quite like hunger, or in the, as we now Orwellianly refer to it, food insecurity. Hunger. But see, we call it food insecurity because we can't quite bring ourselves to note that children do go hungry in this country every day of every week of every month of every year. And so standards were put in place to try to make sure that the meals served at school had a healthy balance to them and were high in nutritional quality. That is all gone now, thanks to, thanks to Sonny Perdue. So the kids at school may not even be nutritionally up to the task of participating in one of 100 different activities in which millions of children surveyed, according to Iwanka Trump, said they've never even tried. You know, things like competitive pearl diving or curling. I went looking for the list. I could not find it. But that's okay. All right, well, under the subject line, go for it, Bob. Silent R. Lamar says, all right, Bob, you've got my permission to say, Ivanka couldn't pour piss out of a boot with the directions on the bottom of the heel. Well, thank you, Silent R. Lamar. I appreciate your sanction on that, because it's true. Oh, my daughter Ivanka went to the best schools, only the best schools, graduated in the top of her class, just like I did. No, Brother Deacon, no, Ace, no. It says, wait a minute, Michelle Obama hustled nutritional supplements too? No. That's our job here, hustling nutritional supplements. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in fact, have you tried schoolyard squash? New, recently, just out from the hardworking, peripatetic, peripathetic, periodontic scientists at Horn Nutrition, Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. That's right, schoolyard squash. A proprietary blend of all the nutritional goodness of squash, an ancient edible plant, vegetable from even before the arrival of white people in the Western Hemisphere. That's right, schoolyard squash. Schoolyard squash is freeze-dried, dehydrated, desiccated, and powdered and ground and put into capsules so that you can get your USRDA of omega-3 organic non GMO gluten-free soy-free free-range cage-free vegan squash, antioxidant, free radical killers. Schoolyard squash from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter is just chock-a-block with free radical squash-based killers. Squash, another one of those sports that millions of children in America have never gotten a chance to try, courtesy of Ivanka Trump. Mm-hmm. Yes, Schoolyard Squash from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Well, it'll perk you up and pep you up and make you feel positively sunny, like the bright golden glow of many squash out there. Yes, and for only for the low price of $336, we'll send you a 90-day supply and a little packet of credulity strips with which you can find out that, well, you've been had by Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Again, Schoolyard Squash. Now, with the Trump administration in place, it comes in crookneck variety. Yes, Schoolyard Squash. Only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Accept no substitutes. Use no hooks. Ask for it by name. Operators are not standing by. No salesman will call. Your mileage may vary. FOB, COD, SQUASH, Schoolyard Squash, now in the crookneck variety, only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Another bullshit nutritional supplement from your friends at Horn Nutraceuticals. Because you can't be a real live, honest to goodness radio program without you got a bullshit nutritional supplement to hand to hustle. So by all means, try. Schoolyard Squash from Horn Nutraceuticals. But you better get your squash from Horn Nutraceuticals, because you're not going to get it in a schoolroom or a school lunch program. No. Now that we've rolled back the school lunch standards, Sonny Perdue today said that he went to a school in Virginia, and he announced that we're going to make school meals great again. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I'm old enough, I remember when we thought school lunch was pretty terrible, and it was. The hamburgers were awful. The hot dogs were okay. What was really good was when the women who worked back there got to actually cook the stuff they were good at home. But mostly it was a matter of just reheating institutions. You know, my kids went through elementary and middle school and high school eating these sort of, and they liked it too. It was weird. It had the strangest taste to it. These rectangular-shaped slices of something that called itself pizza, but was unlike anything, and they had breakfast pizza, too. And they look back fondly on it. On the other hand, we have a dear friend down in Boone County, and she was the lunch lady at school for like 25, 30 years. And she would go into the school kitchen and make food from scratch. To have, and I'm not saying it's nutritional, I'm just saying it's really good. But you want to talk about something stick to your ribs and get you all the way to lunchtime, to have her sausage biscuit, her sausage and gravy, sausage gravy and biscuits, just stop it. Oh. And of course, she kept her own garden every year and put up pickled beets and green beans and if you didn't have a healthy diet sitting at her table, you weren't trying. But no, so now instead of trying to have a little bit of broccoli or some carrots or something like that on the plate once in a while, we're back to schoolyard pizza of the institutional variety made from downer pigs. Yeah, and burritos made from downer cattle. You know what downer cattle are, right? Yeah, I'm brewing somebody's meal right about now. Downer cattle are those cattle at the CAFOs who are so sick that they can no longer stand on their own legs, and they are picked up by forklift to be taken to be killed. And you can't, you know, carve them up into steaks or anything because they're sick. But what you can do is you can turn them into meat products. And you can put it in things like canned stew and canned chili and, you know, canned hot dog sauce and anything that you just grind up meat and put it in it and cook it in the can. You can use, and I remember years and years ago reading a story that said, yep, they go into our school lunch program too. Of course, that was back during the Reign of Error, not before, you know, back before Obama. Yeah, any concept of having decent nutritional standards in our school lunch program administered by the United States Department of Agriculture is gone. It's just gone now. Goodbye. Don't let the door hit you on the way out, on the ass on the way out, nutritional standards. Don't do that. Because how can our kids, how can we make school lunch great again if it's got a bunch of quinoa and kale on it, for Christ's sakes? That's not American. That's not great. No. And particularly, it's not good for the institutional producers of processed foodstuffs. Aha! There we go. That's it. Yeah. So, yeah, here's an idea coming from Scott and Punky. For a year, why not channel 1% of the Pentagon budget into America's school systems? Let the Defense Department hold bake sales, car washes, and candy drives to pay for more lethal nukes and fighter planes the Air Force doesn't actually want. Well, you know how I feel about things like that. You know, they'd be on pogo sticks if it was up to me. You ever seen somebody try to master a pogo stick? It's not a pretty sight. At least it wasn't with me. I tried really hard on the pogo stick, but it just, no. Mm-mm. Never went anywhere. It had such potential, though. So there you go. In fact, I tried to reach her, but I didn't get an answer. I was gonna try to see what was going on my grandchildren's lunch plate at school. No, yeah, but again, I didn't reach her. But I'll find out. I really will. I'd be interested. Because now that we're going to roll back the standards, you know, if we were going to roll back the standards and somebody was going to be actually baking biscuits and making gravy, I probably wouldn't be that upset because, oh, you know, 11 generations of people in this state got by on that. The problem is, and you know, lived to be into their 90s, you know, assuming that they weren't, you know, killed in a slate fall or... The key to those high-fat, high-carb, high-starch diets is that you've got to be working like a dog. And if you do, you'll still... I mean, I got pictures of them. You know, people born back in the 1800s who lived up into the 1900s to, you know, into the 1960s and stuff, and the 1970s, and they are rail thin. Because they had... significantly activity-rich lives. I mean they kept moving. They had to. You ever harvested a few acres of wheat with nothing but you and a scythe? You get the idea. So that's nominee number one. Nominee number two is a story that's actually breaking. Oh, that just hurts, Silent R. Lamar. In the chat room, which you're welcome to wander into if you'd like. The chat room works great. For anybody who, I mean, it's not Java limited anymore. So folks with Apple can folks with Apple devices can get in. Folks with Windows devices can get in. Silent R. Lamar says home cooked greens, mashed potatoes, real meat products. Damn, I missed that time in life at work. Because Silent R. Lamar is of course, you know, an educator. Yeah, back in the 80s, school lunchroom served that kind of thing, Silent R. Lamar says. And, yeah. So, that. Now, another nominee, Michael Cohen. And this is actually breaking news. Michael Cohen, the president's lawyer, has had a search warrant served upon him. It happened kind of, well, interestingly, because special counsel Robert Mueller was provided with information about Michael Cohen, and then he referred it out, instead of keeping it in-house, he referred it out to the FBI in the Southern District of New York, in New York City. And taking a look at the information, the FBI said, maybe we better get a search warrant. And they did. And they didn't just get one, they got two. Yeah. They raided not only Michael Cohen's Manhattan office, but in the New York Times reporting, there's a curious line about how they raided a second site. I'm pulling up the New York Times account here just so I can get it verbatim. Yeah, it's the lead sentence. The FBI raided the office and hotel room of President Trump's longtime personal lawyer, Michael D. Cohen, on Monday, seizing business records, emails, and documents related to several topics, including payments to a pornographic film actress. Stormy. Now, I read that and went, wait. And I'll defer to people who practice law in the greater New York City area, and other areas for that matter. But hotel room? He's a New Yorker. Hey, let's play Presidential Jeopardy. Mrs. Cohen, you have the board. I'll take curious sentences from the New York Times, Alex. This was also raided by the FBI when they served search warrants on Michael Cohen. Beep, beep. What do you mean, hotel room? Demanded Mrs. Cohen. So he's got a law office. And he's also got a hotel room. Now, maybe he was just overnighting in the Super 8. And had a bunch of documents with him. And so that's why the FBI served a search warrant at a hotel room. Sure, that must be it. That or he had a hotel room that it... You know, sometimes the commute over into Westchester County, or maybe the commute all the way into Jersey, is just too much. And so you just keep a hotel room permanently booked there in downtown Manhattan. Maybe that's what it was. But I saw hotel room and I went, what? I mean, I know a bunch of lawyers. They got law offices and they got homes. And the only ones who have hotel rooms that they keep on a permanent basis, well, generally there's somebody who stays in that hotel room. Or somebody who comes to that hotel room from time to time. I mean, you don't just keep, if you're a lawyer, you don't just keep a hotel room because you may need to put up some expert that you're bringing to town for deposition there. No. You just get them a hotel. It's part of the, you know, it's part of the business. But they did. They raided both his Manhattan office and his hotel room. And apparently the FBI carted a whole bunch of stuff away. Among other things, from the search warrant, they were looking for records relating to, for instance, the $130,000 that he claims to have paid on his own initiative to Stephanie Clifford, also known as Stormy Daniels, in the months immediately leading up to the 2016 election. Now, and just a moment to discuss that. From the perspective of the maggots, if it had been disclosed in October 2016 that Donald J. Trump had paid $130,000 of hush money to a porn actress to keep her from talking about their lurid extramarital affair, really, do you think that would have mattered a tinker's damn to all the little maggots running around out there with their Chinese maggot hats? By the way, clothing, as noted, is accepted from the tariffs, the trade tariffs on China. So that way the maggots will not be paying a higher price for their Chinese-made maggot hats. We can feel better about that. But the federal prosecutors, they're looking into bank fraud. And an individual briefed on the search said that the documents that were identified in the warrant go back years. So that's more than one. I wonder if it goes all the way back. Never mind. Wonder if maybe they'll find the receipt for paying those prostitutes in Moscow. The New York Times notes that the search does not appear to be directly related to Mr. Mueller's investigation, but most likely resulted from information that he had uncovered and gave, which he had uncovered and gave to prosecutors. Shouldn't that be given? Doesn't had modify uncovered and the verb give? Sorry. This stuff just leaps off. I can't help it. Maybe this New York Times style manual says had gave is perfectly good in English. Had uncovered and gave to prosecutors in New York. Stephen Ryan is the lawyer for Trump's lawyer. He's not happy right now, Stephen Ryan. He made a statement. He said, "Today, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York executed a series of search warrants and seized the privileged communications between my client, Michael Cohen, and his clients. I have been advised by federal prosecutors that the New York action is in part a referral by the Office of Special Counsel." He also went on to complain and said, "My client was completely cooperating with the government in this investigation. This was totally uncalled for." Lawyer Daggett, you pettifogging genius, you. Apparently, you and the FBI didn't see eye to eye on that. And moreover, the U.S. magistrate who was handed the application for the search warrant and the supporting affidavit didn't agree either. But the essence of the defense is tucked away inside that statement. "Seize the privileged communications between my client, Michael Cohen, and his clients."
You don't really know, but I think you would want client in the singular there, Mr. Ryan.
Because, see, Stephanie Clifford, Stormy Daniels was not his client, but Donald J. Trump was. So instead of two, you've got one, and that means you use the singular client. Expect a tweet storm. Maybe I better check. Because he's going to go out of his mind. What do you mean, go? He's been gone for ages. Nope. Nothing there yet. But speaking to reporters at the White House before he had a meeting with Pentagon brass, Geezer discussed this, said, "It's a disgraceful situation. I have this witch hunt constantly going on." So now, I would imagine, at this hour, that's one of those phrases you use in the news broadcasting business when you're acknowledging that your report is going out across multiple time zones and in fact maybe crossing the international dateline. You say, instead of saying, you know, at 7:03 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, you say at this hour. So I imagine at this hour, there are lots of hardworking lawyers and special agents for the FBI who have begun to plow through what may turn out to be a treasure trove of data relating to just how dirty Donald J. Trump really is. Interestingly, it was described as a referral from Mueller, which means that Mueller didn't necessarily see it as part of his brief for what he's doing relative to his investigation, but he did see it as having the potential for being rife with criminal conduct, which instead means that he passed it off to the FBI office in New York. One little thought with that regard. Wasn't it the FBI office in New York that was the leaking sieve of information that ran toward Rudy Giuliani that led to the nasty ass mess that Comey made in the days, weeks, and months leading up to the 2016 election? One wonders if that office is compromised, frankly. There was certainly information to suggest that back in 2016.
So just to provide a running tally, Michael Cohen is under investigation in Manhattan. Jared is being looked at by prosecutors in Brooklyn. Manafort under indictment. Former National Security Advisor pled guilty. And at least two of his former campaign aides are probably singing louder than Punky, with a new bag of bird feed at hand. In Mueller's investigation. The New York Times describes Cohen as a fixer who has served as a reliable attack dog against real or perceived threats to Mr. Trump. But the bottom line is, there are probably some records in there about the payoff to Stormy Daniels. And here is just a bit of curiosity. I noticed this over the weekend. It was sort of strange. There were, you know, the Trump campaign, it had money coming in, money going out, et cetera. But there's one little bit of weirdness. One individual went digging through the documents and found what we might think of as a puzzlement. Five days. Now we understand. Michael Cohen claims that he used his home equity line of credit to get $130,000, which, out of the goodness of his heart, and with no knowledge whatsoever on the part of Donald J. Trump, he paid to Stormy Daniels to keep her quiet about, work with me here, about a sexual liaison that Donald J. Trump never had with Stormy Daniels, definitely didn't have right after my son was born, and I wasn't much interested in my wife, definitely didn't have that, definitely didn't ask her to spank me with a copy of Forbes magazine, and definitely she doesn't know at all what Tiny Donald even begins to look like. Right. So it's just $130,000, just to keep the story out, which she had been telling for years. But to try to keep it out of the press, you know, a few weeks before the election, because, well, we couldn't have people thinking that Donald Trump committed adultery on his third wife right after the birth of his fifth child by three wives. We couldn't have him thinking that he was an adulterer, even though he'd been on the radio with people like Howard Stern for the better part of a decade and a half talking about what an adulterer he is. We couldn't have people thinking he was an adulterer when he committed adultery during every marriage he's been in, and has been a serial, unsafe fornicator for most of his adult life. Because the evangelicals wouldn't like that. Yeah, the evangelicals knew. Didn't matter a damn to them. But this. Around 5 days after Michael Cohen cut a check on behalf of David Dennison to Stormy Daniels, the Trump Organization, which is the family business. The Trump Organization billed the Trump campaign. What a great number this is. Remember, Cohen writes a check for $130,000. Well, the Trump Org then billed the Trump campaign 5 days later, $129,999.72. Yeah. Apparently Michael Cohen stiffed the Trump Org for 28 cents. Well, we'll just call that part of the billable rate. Yeah, it's fascinating. And you know, while there's no direct evidence to speak to why all the carrying on is necessary, well, the bottom line is that it may very well be an improper campaign contribution, an in-kind contribution. Susan Simpson on Twitter is the one who uncovered all of this. She wrote the following. Something I'd love to see a reporter ask Trump Org about. One, Cohen formed EC LLC on October 17th, 2016. The contract provided for EC LLC to pay Stormy $130,000 by October 27th, 2016. Between October 17th and October 25th, the Trump campaign made payments to Trump Org properties that added up to $129,999.72. $10.17, 2016, Trump National Golf Club, Washington, D.C., facility rental, catering services, $8,544. 10-17-2016, Trump International Hotel, facility rental, catering services, $13,431.88. 10-17-2016, Trump International Hotel, Las Vegas, travel, lodging with an Amex account, $18,731.90. 10-17-2016, Trump International Hotel, Las Vegas, travel, lodging, $79,043.94. And 10-25-2016, Trump International Hotel, travel, lodging, $10,248 for a total of $129,999.72. That's kind of something, isn't it? I'm sure it's entirely a big old coincidence. But you reckon that might be tucked away inside some of the boxes and boxes of stuff. I presume boxes and boxes of stuff were carried away. Inside the boxes and boxes of stuff that were carried away by the FBI today? I'm sure it's just a... Right. Sure. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting, that's all. Just interesting. So it's about 15 minutes past the hour. And again, this program is live. It is the, if you're just tuning in, it's the 9th of April, 2018. we are trying to raise... thanks, by the way, Mike and Cascadia. Thank you. We're trying to raise $336 this evening. That'll finish off the week's fundraising and then leave us this week, and then everything after is fundraising free radio. And wouldn't that be awesome? So let's see how it plays out. Can we do that? I don't know. It was a surprise broadcast, so we'll see. We'll take a break. If anybody's around who wants to engage in conversation, we can do that. And we'll see where the rest of the program takes us, you know, from a Moran Monday perspective. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. And it's a long-distance dedication going out to Michael Cohen, sitting in his now empty hotel room from The Horn. This is for you, Michael.
Dinner in the sink, and I woke up with the bed still made. It was a quiet morning, and I wasn't quite breathing. My heart lay up in my throat. The girl starts screaming, and the maid starts screaming, and it looks like it's all she wrote. Well, they slide me back to life, and they telephone my wife, and they fill me full of Pedialyte. So my guts and my glory, it would make a great story if I ever could remember it right. I don't wanna die in a Super 8 motel just because somebody's evening didn't go so well. If I ever get back to Preston, better
I love that song, and I will take any opportunity to play it. The one and only Jason Isbell and Super 8. Update. I must have blown past that part, courtesy of Darlene in Connecticut. New York Times says Cohen is staying at the Lowe's Regency while his apartment is under renovation, which makes it sound like he's only temporarily residing there. I was speculating on its permanence. The way it initially read from the lead sentence was just a little odd. While his apartment is being renovated. Renovated. Okay, so I'm a little paranoid. Maybe I'm a lot paranoid. But, yeah. You can't say it's surprising now, is it? Or maybe it's just maybe it's the all the ibuprofen and the Orajel that I've been drinking through a straw and it, whatever. Thanks for clearing that up, Darlene. Note coming from Matt in San Francisco. Subject line: pacifist. I consider myself a pacifist. Been to many an anti-war protest that always got mixed up with different groups, so no one really knew what the hell we were protesting, but the tourists love taking pictures because, hey, it's San Francisco. They protest everything. At this point in time, I would be happy to see Trump end up like Mussolini. In fact, there's a street light right outside my house that I'll offer up. Wasn't it a lamp post or something, or a signpost at a gas station in Milan? Isn't that where Benito and Carla, was her name Carla, wound up? Yeah. Well, we don't work that way in the United States, Matt. And I applaud your pacifistic roots. I'm not a pacifist, but I am nonviolent. I want to see Donald Trump tried. And that goes to the larger question, and I wish we could get over it. At least I wish right now, although, well, the framers of the Constitution had every opportunity to say in the Constitution, the president shall be immune to prosecution for crimes while committed in office. Or you could just say, you can't indict the president while he's in office. Straightforward. And James Madison was a consummate drafter. But he was silent. The framers were silent on the issue of whether one could indict the president. My personal guess is that they said, well, it stands to reason that if the guy walks out into the middle of the Pennsylvania Avenue and starts shooting at people, you're going to have to arrest him and you're going to have to indict him. How could you not? This is a nation of laws and not of men. They said things like that back then. But in the immediate aftermath of Watergate, we got that guidance, that Justice Department guidance, after Richard Nixon had been named as an unindicted co-conspirator, we got the guidance that said, you can't indict the president. That's all it is. It's guidance from the U.S. Department of Justice. It is not a law. There's very little in the way of actual law underpinning the notion that you can't indict a sitting president. From the Federalist Papers forward, it's understood that impeachment is a political remedy for a president who commits high crimes and misdemeanors in office, and it solves the question of how do we get a terrible president out of office. But it is not, there's nothing in the Constitution that says this is the only remedy. So what happens when we find out about the vast number of federal crimes likely committed by this president? Well, here's a hint. If Donald Trump gets away with this, and we've got, because, okay, let me fall back to a, everybody's got their, you know, you see the little hashtag Mueller time, Mueller is coming, what have you. Robert Mueller can only do one thing under the conventional understanding of his mandate. He can write a report. He can document the case against Donald J. Trump. And that's it. He's done. And God only knows how long the report would be if he started, if he stopped everything he was doing and started writing right now. You know, we had that the news out, and it couldn't have been much comfort to Tangerine Tiberius, a week or so ago, in which Mueller said that he's not a target of the investigation, but he is a subject of it. Well, as I would imagine, our buddy Billable Rick might suggest, the distance between subject and target is actually not that great a leap. If you're investigating the subject of the investigation, and it turns out the subject of the investigation has committed illegal acts, boom, he becomes a target. Now, Mueller can do more than just write a report. Obviously, he has. He's taken cases to the grand jury. But if he is operating on the theory that he does not have the jurisdiction nor the power to indict a sitting president, all he can do is write a report. And you know damned well that the pearl clutchers in Washington, D.C. are sitting around saying, "Well, my goodness gracious, you can't possibly indict a sitting president. Why, we would then have a constitutional crisis." Bring it. It is my considered opinion, as I've stated repeatedly, that we've been in a constitutional crisis since January the 20th, 2017. I don't know why I keep wanting to say January the 17th, 2020. Maybe I'm just trying to get it all over with. But from the, and I think I mentioned this the other night, from the failure of the Electoral College forward, we have been in constitutional crisis. From the multitude of potential violations, I think actual violations, of the Emoluments Clause, we have been in constitutional crisis. The fact that we have a Congress that will not do its job, that resists doing its job, does not define whether or not we are in a constitutional crisis. The acts relative to the Constitution itself define that. The inaction of the Congress or the corruption of the Congress, hi, Devin Nunes, we're talking about you, those are additional aspects of the constitutional crisis. So we're left with watch this space. We're left with trying to keep up with whatever it is that Mueller is doing and hoping against hope that, let's see, he's bound. That's the thing. He's bound. He's bound by that. Again, it's not law. But he is arguably bound by that guidance from the Department of Justice that says you can't indict a sitting president. And don't look for United States Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III to issue a command to change that guidance Oh, no. And just to give you an idea, because I get, you know, my email box is full of right-wing trash on any given day. But just to give you an idea of where the thinking is coming from the white wing. I saw this earlier today. Probably easier just to search for it. So these things just, there are so many of them, they just blow past. And you glance at them. There it is. Yeah, it came in at 5:08 p.m. this evening. You'll probably hear variations along these lines on Fox if you were to, you know, rot your brain by watching it. Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. The Hannity job will be talking about it. Flimball will be talking about it. Mark Levin, the man with a voice made for print, will be talking about it. It'll probably be blathered on the next mandatory broadcast from Sinclair. For immediate release, contact Robert Romano, April 9th, 2018, phone 703-383-0880, extension 101. Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein should be fired after inexcusable FBI raid on Trump personal attorney. So as soon as this is repeated, probably tomorrow morning, by three shitheads on a sofa over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, look out. Now, there will be, I imagine the phone call has already been made over to U.S. Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. Americans for Limited Government President Rick Manning today issued the following statement calling for Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein to be fired after the FBI raided the office of President Donald Trump's personal attorney, Michael Cohen. It is inexcusable that Special Counsel Robert Mueller would recommend that President Donald Trump's attorney-client privilege be violated in one more example of the win-at-any-cost attitude by this rogue prosecutor. It is beyond comprehension. You know what they left out between rogue and prosecutor? Republican. You see, in all the hooting and hollering about all this, they keep forgetting that everybody associated with the investigation of Donald J. Goddamn Trump is a Republican, Robert Mueller included. It is beyond comprehension how Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein would have allowed the U.S. Attorney in Manhattan and the FBI based in Manhattan to become pawns in Mueller's Constitution-destroying game! Constitution destroying? Jesus, we can't even get people to agree that it's a constitutional crisis. And it's Constitution destroying to investigate potential illegal acts by the President of the United States of America and his personal lawyer? Rod Rosenstein should not still have a job by the end of this week. This prosecutorial insanity has to end. Not particularly committed to spell checking or proofreading their press releases. The Americans for Limited Government. That's basically that's a teabagger outfit that sort of morphed and got transformed into a maggot organization. But there's a question, there's an assumption buried in that press release that I don't know is entirely accurate. I don't know, you don't know, none of us really know, the internal workings of the investigation based upon the mandate? Does Robert Mueller have to call Rod Rosenstein and say, "Mother, may I," every time he wants to go and take a whiz? To hear Americans for Limited Government President Rick Manning tell it. Apparently the answer is yes. Mueller's not investigating Cohen. He got the information. He looked at it. He said, "This does not appear to fit within my brief, but it does rise to the level of potential criminal conduct. So I can't just turn a blind eye to it, because then I myself would be in deep shit. So here, let me send it up the road to Manhattan." Did he have to ask Rosenstein's permission to do that? See, these asshats don't care. They don't care about the rule of law. They care about protecting Trump and his and their access to power at all costs. And with things like this press release, they're trying to curry favor, of course, with the Trump regime. So, if, as I suggested, three shitheads on a sofa will be parroting this by tomorrow morning during executive time, you can imagine that the heat will be on Rosenstein, and of course, getting rid of Rosenstein is the key to getting rid of Mueller. Well, that is a fine, fine point, Darlene, and I agree wholeheartedly. Subject line, no. I'd say we've been in a constitutional crisis since the moment Chinless Mitch and his ilk refused to hold confirmation hearings on Merrick Garland. And it's only snowballed from there with all the other instances you've just cited. There's a compelling case for that, Darlene. There absolutely is. Merrick Garland. Seems a million years ago, doesn't it? So, yeah, look, it's not because I'm some sort of radical anarchist. I'm not. But sometimes you push the envelope so that you can get clarity on an issue. Going back to the Merrick Garland thing, what would have happened if Merrick had taken a little stroll over from the Prettyman U.S. courthouse in D.C. and walked up to the Supreme Court and said, "Hi, fellas, ladies, I'm here. Where's my chair?" The Senate refused to act, and their silence is their acceptance. I'm going to have a seat. I'll just sit right here. Is this where the newest member sits? Yeah, okay, good. And then, of course, somebody would have sued, and maybe Chinless Mitch would have had a stroke, and we would have had ourselves, it is not a crisis when the law is asked to perform the functions for which the law is designed. It's not a crisis when the courts are asked to perform the functions for which the courts are designed. The Supreme Court and other federal courts and courts in general don't offer up advisory opinions. So there was no way to get the court to say, there was no way to ask the court, "Hey, what happens because the Chinless Mitch refuses to act?" The only way to have forced that question would have been to send Merrick Garland up there. And again, it is not outside the realm of possibility to think he could have done it. But we do love our norms, don't we? And when one's nation, one's culture, one's society, one's polity is infatuated with norms, what happens to that polity when the norms are all gone and the power elite insist on continuing to pretend that the norms are still in place? Well, you get a bigger mess than you would have had you simply challenged the norm or challenged the conduct that was causing a departure from the norm. Because in the case of Merrick Garland, the refusal to so much as hold a hearing was a departure from the norm. And yeah, as Darlene notes, they pile one of the departures from the norm, the crises, pile one upon another until there's enough piled up that it just breaks loose at the top of the mountain and forms an avalanche. And what's left in the wake of the avalanche? Oh, that's not a norm either. So, I don't know. Is Mueller another of those people that's infatuated with the norms? Or would that be a surefire way to get him fired if he did indict Donald Trump? Would Rosenstein act in his own capacity and say, "That's it, you're fired, bub"? I don't know the answer. But it sure does seem like it feels like that we are coming to some sort of crossroads. And maybe that's just been with me every day since January the 20th, 2017. Maybe it was with me before then. As I talked about for years now, how crumbling empires behave. You know, one of these days, sometime in the future, is it an immutable law that empires must fall? If some enlightened country catches itself trying to become an empire, could it look up and say, no, we don't want to fall, so therefore we're not going to be an empire? You can catch intimations of this in things like Washington's farewell address, where he says, avoid foreign entanglements. For all of their faults, there was something in there that said, you know, there was already a conflict dynamic in place with the westward expansion and the displacement of native peoples and the genocides on the one hand, and the idea that, if we're going to be, you know, we'll just take the continent, but Washington says avoid foreign entanglements. Even up to the time when Woodrow Wilson was trying at first to keep the United States out of the First World War, he used that, they used those words too. We must not get entangled in Europe's bloodletting. Could the United States have prevented itself from becoming an empire? I honestly and earnestly do not know. But there's more for this Moran Monday than simply Michael Cohen and precious Ivanka. Oh, yes. There's some follow-up, for instance. I think it was Friday in my not particularly well-off state in that 40-minute broadcast I did that I mentioned a really creepy dude in St. Louis by the name of Jamie Allman. He tweeted, and then it disappeared, but not before it could be caught. I've been hanging out getting ready to ram a hot poker up David Hogg's ass tomorrow. Busy working, preparing. Well, once it fell on the desk of Missouri State Representative Stacey Newman, Newman called for an advertiser boycott. The Riverfront Times grabbed the tweet initially and kept it from falling down the memory hole. Twitter actually got off its ass and did something and shut down his account, and as of today, Jamie Allman's account is set to private. Among other things, the call for the boycott has begun to work. Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, an advertiser with his program, has bailed out. A real estate firm has bailed out. And a health and wellness center in the St. Louis area has bailed out. Here's the rub. He doesn't just have a radio program, he's got a TV program. Well, he's identified as a talk show host. Maybe he's only got the TV program. I don't know, I could be wrong. But he does have a TV program. It airs on a station in St. Louis, the ABC affiliate there, named KDNL. Got us by any moment. Guess who owns KDNL? That's right. It's a Sinclair station. So even though advertisers are bailing, one does not necessarily know whether KDNL will find it intolerable for him to threaten violence against, a teenager. Given Sinclair's reputation, that might be right in their sweet spot. Thought you might like to know that. Meanwhile, back to Cohen for just a minute, back to Michael Cohen. This is kind of interesting. Over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, after Donald Trump said what he said, and you recall the press release from Americans with limited brains, and said, attorney-client privilege. Well, they brought in Judge Napolitano over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, and it didn't go well.
Robert Varney just said to me, isn't there an attorney-client protection?
Right.
And my very quick response to him while you were interviewing Senator Kennedy was, not if there's a serious allegation of unlawful activity by the lawyer with the client. Now remember, this was
the lawyer being Cohen, the client being
his only client, the President of the United States.
All right.
A little bit of background. Mr. Cohen's office is located on the 26th floor of Trump Tower, right in the midst of the Trump Organization. This is not a traditional, discreet lawyer's office as one would understand it to be. He works for Donald Trump, the person, and the Trump Organization and its various entities. And that, as far as I understand from sources, is all he works for.
In other words, he is a captive lawyer. There aren't pictures of Michael Cohen on taxicabs running around downtown Manhattan. Slipped? Fell? Call Mike. Injured in an accident? Call Lawyer Cohen. Bankruptcy? Michael Cohen's your man. No. He's a thing. He's a tool. He's the guy who writes the nasty grams for Donald Trump in an effort to blow and bluster his way out of having to take responsibility for his own actions. So when Stephen Ryan said information from his clients, remember that quote? Let me see if it, yeah. Today, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York executed a series of search warrants and seized the privileged communications between my client, Michael Cohen, and his clients. Well, if by clients you mean Donald J. Trump and the Trump Organization, okay, clients. But the Trump Organization is Donald J. Trump, and Donald J. Trump is the Trump Organization. So clients is not necessarily an accurate statement. Do continue, Judge Napolitano.
But we know, of course, of the Stormy Daniels allegations, which is, where could this money have come from? Would it be lawful if it didn't come from Donald Trump? And if it came from Donald Trump, why did the president not acknowledge it? But we know as...
Well, actually deny it, that he knew nothing about it.
Correct. So there must be some evidence presented to a federal judge here in New York City sufficient to persuade that judge to sign a search warrant to permit the FBI in broad daylight to raid an attorney's office, particularly when that attorney has one client and happens to be the president of the United States. That evidence would have to be such as to persuade a neutral observer, the federal judge, that it is more likely than not that among these seized documents is evidence of crimes by Mr. Cohen or Mr. Cohen and the president. What's funny?
That's actually fairly succinct. Which is and reasonably accurate, which is both of which are surprising, as touching upon, you know, Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. But as if you're a devotee, an aficionado, or aficionada, of Friday on the Front Porch, I think what was it, two Fridays back? Billable Rick and I talked at some length about this. A lawyer cannot hide behind lawyer-client privilege in regard to illegal acts perpetrated by the lawyer and or the client, or the client and or the lawyer. And no, this is basic constitutional law stuff. Search warrants are controlled by the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. And oddly enough, as is the case with most constitutional provisions, there's a lot more written about it than there actually is in the amendment. It's a short little son of a gun. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. It's one sentence. Lots of clauses, but one sentence. Note that within the linguistic meaning of the Fourth Amendment, the drafters acknowledged that even searches and seizures are violations of the Fourth Amendment, but they are violations that are permitted because they are supported by oath or affirmation, particularly describe the place to be searched, and they describe the persons or things to be seized. The oath or the affirmation has to do with, I mean, you can't, you know, I swear, upon information and belief, FBI Special Agent Schmendrick do hereby state that I'm really sure that Michael Cohen has a blue sofa. That's not enough. There has to be an allegation of criminal conduct regarding that blue sofa. I believe Michael Cohen has a blue sofa, the cushions of which are stuffed with $100 bills that he got by mugging old ladies in Central Park. Mugging is a crime. That would get you there. But just wanting to go on a fishing expedition to Michael Cohen's apartment and his law office in Trump Tower? Uh-uh. So, a simple examination of the Fourth Amendment will give you a pretty good idea that the FBI moved because they felt that it was more likely than not that there was evidence of criminal conduct within the things, the documents, I bet they got some computers too, to be seized. So as you, if you find yourself at all watching right-wing news, or if, for instance, you're a follower of Donnie Dimwit's Twitter, and they start hooting and hollering, or he starts hooting and hollering, about how it's unfair, it shouldn't happen. Consider what had to have been within the four corners of that search warrant application and affidavit and inventory. Consider also that even as an FBI agent, I know we don't put cops in jail very often, but still, even as an FBI agent, if you show up at a federal judge's place with a warrant affidavit and you're lying, your ass is grass. So, with all apologies to Gertrude Stein, where this thing is concerned, there kind of has to be some there. Okay, have we worn this issue out? By the way, if you want to converse at all. And I'm not sure how many folks are out there listening live right now. But if you want to converse, you can always ring in at 304-574-8178 or toll-free 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And, of course, from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Okay?
some other Morans, because it's Moran Monday. I guess in a way, this would be sort of a dog bites man story. You know, as in, so what? Happens all the time. But just to keep track of things, you've got this almond creep in St. Louis wanting to ram a red-hot poker up David Hogg's ass. And then there's the Nuge. Now, this is a guy who's part of whose concert shtick, he hasn't sold a record since God was a baby. Part of his concert shtick was to suggest that he wanted to murder Hillary Clinton and that he wanted to murder Barack Obama. As far as I can tell, he never got a visit from those humorless men and women in the black suits with the white shirts and the skinny black ties who spend a lot of time talking to their wrists. No. And because of that, because he's gotten away with it for so long, he figured he'd just continue. After attacking the Parkland kids because he knew he didn't have a brand that could be harmed, because again, you know, guy hasn't sold a record since Christ was a corporal in the army of God. Hey, he's got nothing to lose. He sits there on the board of the National Rifle Association, America's wealthiest, most powerful domestic terror organization, and does the dirty work of people who would like to say these things, but have brands that they would rather not have demolished, like Laura Ingraham, like happened to Laura Ingraham. And so it is that reported 2 days ago Danuge went on who else's show,
Alex Jones,
and suggested, oh God, this is disgusting. It's disgusting even to report. He suggested that people murder liberals. Now, once again, when something awful like that happens, and someone points out that the Nuge and Alex Jones, by extension, called for it, they will say, we're only entertainers. How could we possibly know that some crazy person would hear what we said and go do the thing that we said they should do? So, this past Friday, Ted Nugent engaged in conversation. I will spare you the audio
with Alex Jones.
And Jones said,
Ted, why do you think it is that these liberals want to ban guns, want to take away our guns?
To which Ted Nugent replied, and I'm not monkeying with the language at all, this is a quote, in point of fact, let me see if I can just pull it up real quick. I will bedevil you with the audio
Why not? Maybe it's beneficial. Maybe it's beneficial that we put this audio into the program, if I can get my hands on it. Yeah, there it is. Let's go to the audio, shall we?
And because the spirit's coming back, it makes it that much more important. Don't you feel that we've got to fight and win and to realize what we're up against, because we've really drawn out the other side to show their true America-hating evil, their true prosperity-hating evil. Then I ask, why do they love communism? Why do they love collapse?
Be careful asking those questions. I have people ask me, well, why would they want to ban this bullet or this? And I don't go down the why.
Now, understand, that's not me making the audio sound crummy. With all of his millions, Alex Jones goes and shoots this in apparently Ted Nugent's kitchen somewhere in Texas, and they can't mic him up for decent audio. But that's one of those audiophile things, right?
Road. If you start asking why does a woman who gets up there and says you don't need to read this, you need to sign it to find out what's in it. I mean, why wasn't she tackled on the House floor and handcuffed and given some sort of treatment? You don't ask why, just know.
Wait, okay, before we get to the don't ask why part, she stood up there and said, you don't need to know, just vote on it. I'm pretty sure that I'm spot on when I say that that's been the modus operandi of the Republican Congress for at least, 8 years? Why can't we read the bill? Shut up and vote on it. That's McConnell. That was Boehner. And remember, they came in under Boehner. Well, everybody's going to have a chance to read the bill and read it thoroughly and thoroughly digest it. Shut up and vote on it. No, you don't get to see the bill. Boehner, Paul Ryan, it matters not. It's how they operate. But the only thing the Nuge can remember is that he really, really hates Nancy Pelosi. And consequently, he can only remember things that she did that he didn't like. And of course, Alex isn't sitting across from him ready to challenge him on the fact that that's the entire operating structure of the entire Republican Congress either, because, well, that doesn't work now, does it? That doesn't keep the little maggots out there ordering a paleo chocolate chicken bone shake mix. Back to the Nuge.
Oh, that evil, dishonesty, and scam artists have always been around, and that right now they're liberal, they're Democrat, they're rhinos, they're Hollywood, they're fake news, they're media, they're academia, and they're half of our government, at least. So come to that realization. There are rabid coyotes running around. You don't wait till you see one to go get your gun. Keep your gun handy, and every time you see one, you shoot one.
They're trying to conquer us. I can feel their will. I can see it.
There it is. That is a direct comparison of people who disagree with him politically to rabid coyotes that Ted Nugent wants to shoot. And he's not saying go to the ballot box. He didn't say go to the ballot box. He didn't say, I mean, figuratively. He said, shoot the liberals. He also said, you know, the government's made up of rhinos and blah, 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 blah. And he wants to shoot them. Now, again, I didn't spend a lot of time during the Reign of Error walking around terrified that a 6'6" Arab with a portable dialysis machine was going to reduce my local Wally World to a heap of smoking rubble. This bastard is chilling. because he sits high atop the power structure, again, of the wealthiest, most powerful domestic terror organization in the United States. And people listen to him who have lots of guns and not lots of brains. This is another one of those law school moments about what reasonably foreseeable means. When you've got a bunch of people who've been ginned into paranoid hysteria, and you tell them that liberals and Democrats and anyone who proposes any sort of reform to the insanity of our gun laws are rabid coyotes who need to be shot, and you got to keep your gun around, and when you don't wait, and when you see one, you shoot one. It is reasonably foreseeable that somebody's going to get killed. And that is what these bloodthirsty fucking animals want. Now, I just go, oh, well, you know, you're decrying the use of Ted Nugent's use of violence, but you just called him a bloodthirsty fucking animal. Didn't say shoot him, did I? Now, I take a somewhat different view of the First Amendment. I recognize that there are limits on what is called free speech in this country. You know, the whole can't yell you can't yell movie in a crowd, right. You cannot incite mass panic. Well, the goddamned NRA has been inciting mass panic since Ronald Reagan at the very least. There was a time when they were a kind of semi-respectable organization that promoted good marksmanship and safe gun handling classes and proper hunting technique. Those days are gone. That horse is out the barn burnt down, and the ship sailed. Because the ship has sailed, too, now that we're mixing metaphors. But in a country that took free speech seriously, and in a country in which there are millions upon millions of guns, and in a country in which we make pronouncements after every mass shooting that whoever the lawful gun owner was who was squeezing the trigger must have been crazy. You know, if the NRA is that concerned about all the crazies with guns out there, then isn't it reasonably foreseeable, or wouldn't the reasonably prudent organization not do things to drive the crazies with the guns to do the crazy things that wind up with like 17 kids dead in North Miami? Wouldn't they? Wouldn't a country take the concept of incitement a little more seriously if we really believe that there is that every one of these shootings is perpetrated by someone who has become mentally unhinged? And of course, that whole argument is bullshit anyway, because most of these shootings are perpetrated by people who are quite sane. It was a couple of weeks ago when a prosecutor announced in Florida that they intend to seek the death penalty for Nicholas Cruz. The families of some of the victims said that they thought that was a bit precipitous, that they had not been consulted about their wishes. Well, here's a hint. Rightward leanings of the Supreme Court notwithstanding, it is still not okay to execute someone who is straight up crazy. You can't execute somebody who doesn't know why they're being executed. Matt in San Francisco says, cat scratch? I think he definitely has a fever, but it's not from a cat. He needs a Thorazine dart to the neck. You know, just a little something to, you know, take the edge off. Because remember, Ted doesn't drink or do drugs and never has. I mean, he wasn't even willing to get all potted up to stay out of Vietnam. Instead, he shit all over himself and walked around in it for a couple of weeks or days or whatever it was, and was nice and stinky and crusty when he showed up to the draft board, or so he claimed. But I-O-K-I-Y-A-R, I guess, right? I-O-K-I-Y-A-N-R-A. But the next time, the next school shooting that comes along, let's make sure to play, or God forbid, a political assassination, let's make sure we play this fucking clip of Ted Nugent. And maybe you can find it over at Media Matters, mediamatters.org. The National Rifle Association hates it that they keep these clips up. But like homicide detectives and things like that, they don't go to Media Matters. Bookmark this clip. The headline reads, NRA's Ted Nugent compares Democrats to rabid coyotes. Keep your gun handy, and every time you see one, you shoot one. I think back to the Atkinson guy who left a manifesto after he shot up a Universalist congregation in Tennessee that included Rush Limbaugh, Hannity, O'Reilly, what's his name? Bernard Goldberg. He explained why and how he had been weaponized to go and kill liberals. He wanted to kill Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid and some other liberals, but barring that, he decided to just go and shoot up a children's play at a Unitarian church instead. But he told us why he wanted to do it, and he was weaponized by right-wing hate talkers. But wouldn't it be interesting to start asking the question of murderers the next time they shoot up a school or a movie theater or a shopping center or a parking lot or a university campus or what have you? You ever heard of Ted Nugent?
Yeah, I love the Nuge. He rocks. And he protects our Second Amendment. He also said we needed to shoot some liberals like coyotes.
Ding, 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 ding. Reasonable foreseeability. Let's get the rest of the clip, then I'll go to the phones.
Control freaks. So for me, it's such an animating contest just to get them off my back.
Well, and that's why they hate me so much, because I'm uncontrollable. And in all this observation of the good, the bad, and the ugly, it's important to note that my name is Ted Nugent. I'm entering my 70th rock and roll year of the American dream, my 70th hunting season. I got 14 grandkids and 7 wonderful kids, the most beautiful, dangerous wife in the world, the greatest hunting dogs in the world. I have machine guns and everything I want in life, the best sounding band, the best grinding rhythm and blues rock and roll band in the world. But there's the most important thing I can say is there's only one thing more dangerous than a sow grizzly bear with cubs nearby. And that's Ted Nugent with more confidence. We have reached critical mass, and I'm loving every greasy, gory rhythm and blues Motown minute of it.
I think you just... Well, no, I'm not going to do that. But, yeah.
There's an idea. I think you can get that in video games. Silent R. Lamar says, I have an idea. As an engineer, maybe I should design a smart bullet that would hit the shooter if the shooter is shooting at an unarmed person and non-attacker. Wow. What an idea. So it's 20 minutes past the hour, and again, I know nobody was expecting me to be here this evening, but we got about $336 to raise. Sorry to mention it. It's the only way I can do it. So, you know, 10 at $33.60 or 33.6 people at $10. Yeah, it doesn't really work that way, does it? 168 at 2. 84 at 4. 8 at 42. 16 at 21. 32 at $10.50. 64 at 5 and a quarter. There, I did it. I knew I could. So let's go and see what Scott and Punky have to say. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. A couple of things kind of jumped out at me from that video, audio.
They weren't rabid coyotes, were they?
No, they weren't.
Because you got to shoot them and liberals.
No, that
you make it easy to work, Scott.
I know.
I'm not making fun of you. I just want to thank you for a moment. You make it easy to work.
Yes, they scurried out from behind the bushes, from the shrubbery. Just they hippity hoppitied their way across the landscape of life. And I, with no shooting iron in sight, damn. Well, anyway, actually, before I go into that, let me...
Squidbillies review?
Not yet. Let me bring to your attention a couple of things. If I'm not mistaken, I believe today is the birthday, maybe even the 90th birthday, of one of the great minds in American music and humor, the great Tom Lehrer.
Really?
Is having a birthday today. And I hold the day of his birth in high regard, even reverence.
Do you have a particular favorite Tom Lehrer song?
Oh, that's like picking who do I love more, Punky or Chirps the Cat, you know? If you held me down and tickled me until I made up my mind, I think an easy pick for favorite Tom Lehrer tune is from That Was the Year That Was, because he only did like 3 or 4 albums in his entire career. I mean, he only did performing from the late 50s. He did it in the late 50s for a couple of years, like nightclubs and concert halls and stuff. And then he kind of went away, and he came back for a few more live performances, one of which was captured in the album That Was the Year That Was. And then he went back to teaching full-time, left entertainment behind.
Well, given the environmental degradation and everything that we've got here, let me just throw one out for fun.
Oh, okay, I know that one. That would almost was my guess. But one of them that could easily qualify as my favorite is Smut. Give me Smut and Nothing But. A dirty novel I can't shut. If it's on... His rhymes in that are exquisite.
Well, I thought we would just, again, because, you know, why not? How about a little Pollution from Tom Lehrer in celebration of his 90th birthday?
When you go out for a breath of air, you'll be ready.
Let Tom do it.
Okay, all right.
If you visit visit American City, you will find it very pretty. Just two things of which you must beware: don't drink the water and don't breathe the air. Pollution, pollution, they got smog and sewage and mud. Turn on your tap and get hot and cold running crud. See the halibuts and the sturgeons are being wiped out by detergents. Fish gotta swim and birds gotta fly, but they don't last long if they try. Pollution, pollution, you can use the latest toothpaste and then rinse your mouth with industrial waste. Just go out for a breath of air and you'll be ready for Medicare. The city streets are really quite a thrill. If the hoods don't get you, the monoxide will. Pollution, pollution, wear a gas mask and a veil. Then you can breathe, long as you don't inhale. Lots of things there that you can drink, but stay away from the kitchen sink, the breakfast garbage that you throw into the bay. They drink at lunch in San Jose. So go to the city, see the crazy people there, like lambs to the slaughter. They're drinking the water and breathing the air.
It does not get better than that. I just tell you... let me tell you something. I discovered Tom Lehrer's music, I believe, as a fifth grader. I used to go to the library a lot, and I discovered the library had albums that you could take out for 2 weeks, just in the way that you take out books for 2 weeks, or whatever the period was. And I would automatically gravitate to the comedy and spoken word section. And one of the albums in that collection at my neighborhood library was the Tom Lehrer record album. That was the year that was. So I guess that would have been 65. So that's right at my fifth grade year. And I took that sucker home, and having been raised Catholic, one of the cuts on the album of special interest was the Vatican Rag. I mean, according to the priests and nuns, that type of material obviously
right to hell.
Condemned in the eyes of church, Mother Church, if not hell, hard time in purgatory in any event, okay? And having kind of an unfortunate childhood in many ways, and being at that uncomfortable age, you know, as a fifth grader, growing up in the 60s, just outside of Washington, his music and his take on life was a tonic. You know, and I can't put it any more succinctly than that. And my favorite quote of his, when people would ask him why he had stopped performing, he said, "Political satire became obsolete when Henry Kissinger was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize."
Oh, he gave us, as a kid growing up in the 60s and 70s in Northwest Alabama, we were justifiably proud, being as how it's Alabama, we were justifiably proud of the fact that we had a center of technology and the advance into the bold future of science just 72 miles to the east in Huntsville. And in fact, we were so enamored of the man who led that effort that to this day the civic center there is named the Von Braun Civic Center.
Mm-hmm.
And so consequently, the first I ever heard of Tom Lehrer was
The rocket goes up. Who cares where it comes down? It's not my concern, says Verna von Braun.
Yeah. The widows and cripples in old London town now owe their large pensions to Werner von Braun. You too could be a big hero when you've learned to count backwards to zero. In German and English, I know how to count down, and I'm learning Chinese, says Werner von Braun. Oh, man. Now,
you know, one of the, and this is before it became a thing, one of the oddities of von Braun's life is that after he left Huntsville, and he left Huntsville fairly early, he winds up in Houston, as in Houston, we have a problem,
mm-hmm.
where he becomes a dedicated, diehard evangelical Christian.
No, I didn't know that.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true.
Who did he fall in with? One of the big mega pastors down there?
You can't swing a squash racket in a place like Houston without hitting some sort of evangelical pastor. And this is even, they were at the forefront of rich pastors long before the rise of the prosperity gospel and Kenneth Copeland and that bunch. But yeah, he fell in with them and got all Jesus-y, but we don't talk a lot about that. We talk about back when he was a scientist.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I thought I would mention that.
And so Tom is still around?
Yeah. Well, he's having his birthday today. They got to take the cake to somebody. But I don't know if I dare even mention this. Because you know this crowd. They'll get on the bandwagon and get all congratulatory and stuff. Well, no, I'm not. No, I may as well. You know, his phone number is in the phone book in the town in California where he lives.
Don't mention the town. How about?
Okay. All right. But anyway, I couldn't let the day pass without mentioning that. But, of course, that's not why I called.
No, naturally.
A couple of the items that jumped out at me in that conversation between Alex Jones and Ted Nugent. In the early part of the interview, I think Alex Jones uses the expression we stirred them up or made them show themselves, something along those lines. Can you replay that? It's in the right at the beginning of the bit.
Of the clip? Okay.
Yeah.
You mean Nugent talking or Alex?
It's Alex.
Okay, hang on. Damn it, I hate the way this works. Stand by.
And because the spirit's coming back, it makes it that much more important. Don't you feel that we've got to fight and win and to realize what we're up against, because we've really drawn out the other side to show their true America-hating evil, their true prosperity-hating evil? And then I ask, why do they love communism? Why do they love collapse?
Be careful asking those questions. I have people ask me, well, why would they want to ban this bullet or this? And I don't go down the why road. If you start asking why does a woman who gets up there and says, you don't need to read this, you need to sign it to find out what's in it. I mean, why wasn't she tackled on the House floor?
Was it in there somewhere?
Yeah. We draw them out.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess it can be presumed that the we in question are Alex Jones and Ted Nugent, because those two are having the conversation.
No, I think he's including every mass shooter in there too, because those are the people who are really doing the drawing out, aren't they?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm getting at. You would presume that the we in question would be Ted and Alex. and I'm looking for Bob and Carol now. But anyway, you presume it's Ted Nugent and Alex Jones as the we, but the we must also include people of a like mindset. And hell, that's everything from the NRA membership rolls to anybody who listens to what Ted Nugent or Alex Jones have to say. So that's a pretty large gathering of we, okay?
Well, I mean, then, relatively speaking, yes.
Yeah. And then toward the end of the clip, Ted Nugent is talking about, you know, why people should stand in awe and be afraid. A further uncontrollable Ted Nugent, I think, is what is the verbiage that he used or something close to it. So you've got those two aspects, okay? And then the typical response when somebody breaks ugly and kills a bunch of people because they've listened to these fools, the typical response is, well, we have no control over what people do.
Right, that's what I was getting at.
Well, we're only entertainers. How could we be held responsible for anything?
Exactly.
Okay, well, wait a minute. Alex Jones has commercials, doesn't he? He delivers the commercial copy for the people who pay money to place that ad on his program to reach his audience, okay? How is it that the commercial segments of his program should be acted upon quickly and repeatedly by gullible consumers, yet the content part, the program part of his program, no one should pay a bit of attention to? How do they think that people are so stupid who make a judgment about these things that we would not see that if they want people to pay strict attention and follow through on the commercial message, why wouldn't those same people pay strict attention and some of them follow through on the so-called entertainment portion of the program? And I hope there's a lawyer out there who will take all of this information and hang on to that clip and use it, bring it up as a point the next time one of these cases happens and the perpetrator is brought to trial. You know, I mean, they'd have to establish that he listens to people like Ted Nugent and Alex Jones. But let's say he does, because I believe there have been shooters in the past.
Right, precisely my point. You have to establish the connection, and who knows? Maybe people don't want to establish that connection.
Well, no, because once such an establishment of a connection is made, that brings to bear some bit of scrutiny and hopefully some responsibility on the part of the people who put out the program and the people who acted upon it, shooting up the place. And I mean, this is not a new concept, the thing about commercial speech getting paid attention to versus the program element speech getting paid attention to. I brought this up 20 years ago when Limbaugh was first starting out.
Well, see, the classic case here, among others, is related to the Beckerhead.
Glenn Beck, yeah.
Well, there's two classic cases. Perhaps the more deadly one is Bill O'Reilly night after night after night intoning Tiller the Killer, Tiller the Killer, Tiller the Killer, Tiller the Killer, until a killer went out and shot Dr. Tiller even as he stood in his church worshiping Christ Jesus.
Yeah.
There's that. Then there's the Beckerhead, who day after day, night after night, rails and rants against George Soros and progressives and the Tides Foundation and George Soros and the Tides Foundation and the Tides Foundation and George Soros until some soft skull goes and he has to drink a bunch of liquid courage first and takes a carload of guns and whatever and heads for San Francisco because he's going to do Glenn Beck's bidding and take out the Tides Foundation.
Yeah.
He got busted on the way for DUI. And his mother even went so far as to talk about how obsessed he had become with the Tides Foundation because of. Did anything happen? No. And again, what was his name? Jim Atkison and the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Knoxville, Tennessee. The guy, you can look it up. Atkison Manifesto, Knoxville, Tennessee. And he'll tell you. And it's chilling. I've read it on this program before. And you can see the inventory of all the right-wing poison that he consumed. Again, O'Reilly, Bernie Goldberg, Limbaugh, Michael Savage. And we seem to have an almost stubborn resistance to calling these people out.
Yeah.
Or a resistance to acknowledging the impact that they have. But because they're afraid, well, you know, that's just too tenuous a connection. No, Scott, no, because look, pick something stupid. If you're watching an old episode of the Andy Griffith Show.
Yeah.
And you are inspired to go and shoot up a school because of something you heard in the Andy Griffith Show. That connection is so tenuous and so attenuated and so divorced from reality that you look and go, no, he's nuts. That there's no way anybody could anticipate that anybody would ever do that. That is not foreseeable in the least.
Yeah, you can't blame the notion that Aunt B's pickles taste bad made me so mad.
Right, so the guy goes and shoots up the Vlasic factory. Right.
Yeah, there you go.
On the other hand, that was a good call, by the way. On the other hand, when a guy, day after day, night after night, goes after an individual by name, and that person is later murdered. I think standards of even the most basic investigatory skill set demand that you make inquiry into that.
Yeah.
And you know, the guy, you know, okay, so he didn't shoot up the Tides Foundation, but does that stop us from making that connection? And and as I said, what's going to happen when somebody shoots up a school and starts howling like a coyote, or takes a pot shot at some identified liberal from the Congress? I mean, can we finally go have a conversation with Alex Jones and Ted Nugent?
Well, one of the common attempts at defense that these people use, the NRA and slick lawyers and even Trump himself, when he deigns to make a comment about shootings, they blame so-called mental illness. And I'll be the first to admit that that mental illness, or at least mental illness and instability play a part in causing these shootings. But there's also the mindset that you could have somebody who is otherwise perfectly rational, or mostly rational, if their diet of information is nothing but these right insidious, hateful, nonsense talking right wing crazies, if their steady diet 7 days a week is a collection of these numbskulls, okay?
That it will eventually reasonably foreseeably take a toll?
Well, not only that, but the fact that part of their shtick is, and you must believe what we're saying, and you cannot trust what anybody else tells you about whatever this topic is, so that even if a person has second thoughts about going out and doing something horrible, they begin to not even trust their own inner conscience or voice.
Yeah, but I want to go back to what you said about mental illness, and I want to make something abundantly clear here. If you look at the statistics, and people are not just a bundle of numbers, but the community of people or the population of people who are mentally ill is statistically no more violent than the so-called sane people are, okay? And perhaps less violent. Now, that is not to say that mentally ill people do not commit crimes, but to cite mental illness is to engage in a little bit of issue legerdemain. Because it looks to it diverts our attention from the real cause. If Nicholas Cruz couldn't have gotten anything more than a baseball bat, he would have hurt somebody. But he wouldn't have killed. He might have killed one person, but he would not have killed 17.
No.
If he had been dressed like a ninja and had a bunch of throwing stars, or nunchaku or whatever. He would have hurt somebody, perhaps killed somebody, but not 17. Look at the ambush of the concert in Las Vegas. Okay? Again, it is the presence of the firearms that makes the process a mass killing, not the mental state of the person doing the killing.
Well, you want to talk about statistics. It came out not too long ago that on a percentage basis, the incidence of mental illness in any country that you care to name is the percent on a percentage basis is essentially the same as mental illness percentage basis is in the United
States.
It
is globally fairly consistent, but other countries don't have these problems.
And you could look at, I wonder why that is. Well, if you were to ask me what I thought about it, I would say the easy availability of nearly any goddamn weapon that you care to mention, and ammunition to boot, being available has something to do with it. And then you add on the layer of nonstop right-wing gun talk, crazy talk, that has got to play in these situations. I mean, it cannot not play into these things happening. And here's one from left field, but it goes to show another point to bring to the table. Back in the 80s, I guess it was, or it might have been the early 90s, there was a plethora of afternoon TV talk shows. Maury and Sally Jesse Raphael and Oprah and several others. I mean, it was like you couldn't turn on a TV in the afternoon or mid-morning without catching one of these TV talk shows. And there was one that was hosted by a woman whose first name was Jenny, but I forget her last name. And one day the topic was, someone has a secret crush on you, and it's someone of your own sex.
Oh, yeah, and that person got, yeah.
Yeah. So here they have this young man and this young woman, okay, and another young man for whom the first young man had a secret crush. And I forget exactly whether he made it clear that he had a secret crush, but the gist of the story is that after the show was over, some time passed, and the young kid on whom someone had the crush ended up murdering the kid who had the secret crush on him. Do you recall that?
I do recall it, and I can't remember who it was, who the talk show was, but
It was Jenny someone, and I just can't think of her last name. And when the case went to trial, I think the kid's defense was he had been embarrassed on national television, made to look bad, by participating in this program, and it drove him over the edge. And I forget what the disposition of it was, but I bring it up only to make the point that what these right-wing talkers are claiming is nothing more than entertainment is a life and death thing for somebody, because there are non-discerning viewers and listeners who don't have sense enough or filter enough to not take it seriously, take it to heart, take up their guns, and go blow away a room full of people. Is that pretty much right on?
I think so.
It looks like it to me.
Yeah. Well, we got a few minutes left in the program, Todd. Sorry, my bad. I just saw Ted. I heard Todd. Scott.
Yeah.
Jesus. We got a few minutes left of the program, and I'm going to try to create a little space for somebody else to call in if
All
they
right.
want to. But no, your point is well taken. And if you ask one of these legal types about it, they'll tell you, this is just a very complex problem. Well, it seems to get a lot less complex when it's Ted Nugent saying, liberals are coyotes, and you have to shoot rabid coyotes.
Yeah, that's pretty plain to me.
Jenny Jones, by the way, Jenny Jones.
Jenny Jones. Okay, thank you.
That courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa.
Okay, man, take care.
All right, you too. How did Punky like his new seed?
Oh, he loves it. It's the same seed as he's always eaten. But it was something about getting a fresh jar of it.
Well, that's the thing. You can't beat it when it's fresh. Right. All right, Scott, you take care. Bye now.
You too. Bye-bye.
That's Scott and Punky calling from San Diego. I don't want to suppress free speech. I mean, obviously, you start just willy-nilly suppressing free speech, and, you know, this program doesn't exist anymore. But when that free speech, when there's a direct line between murder and the insane, and the Jenny Jones is not, it's not even the same category. I remember the story. This is something entirely different. This is somebody beating the drums to have somebody go out and kill someone. And then someone goes out and kills someone, and the person who incited it says, "Free speech, I'm just an entertainer." At some point in time, that's going to have to change, or else all of free speech will go away, and not just that sort of stuff, because eventually there will be a knee-jerk reaction. Let's go check in with Mike in Cascadia. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how's it going, Bob?
Good. How about you?
Hey, pretty good. I don't want to give too much airtime to Ted Nugent because he's probably really not worth it. And you and Scott said a lot, but in this clip he mentioned a mama bear and her cubs. He's probably one of the guys that'll take advantage of Zinke's new rule, where you can hunt into the dens, right? Where you can kill the cubs and wolf cubs and bear cubs in their dens.
You know, I didn't even think about it, but you're absolutely right, because we've got that new rule that allows hunters to go
right.
and slaughter
hibernating bears.
Yeah, exactly. And I grew up in Montana, and we did a lot of hiking. We were pretty close to Yellowstone, and we did a lot of hiking and backpacking around there. And we always knew that the most dangerous animal in the woods in those areas weren't the grizzly bears, but it was the moose. So, I mean, Ted Nugent, he's not legit on anything, really. I mean, he's...
Really? I've got a certain lack of understanding. The moose is the most dangerous?
That is right. Yeah, you wanted to really stay away from moose because they're very unpredictable. You never know what they're going to do. Where bears, you can make noise, and they'd usually, especially a mama bear with her cubs, she'd usually try to, you know, to try to stay away from you.
Well, I know with in the woods here in Appalachia, you know, we've got we got black bears, and
yeah,
and now they will come and dine out of your garbage can if you're silly enough to leave it there for them to do so. But that's just their behavior. But they generally speaking, out in on their own turf, they are shy animals, and they're beautiful animals.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, they are opportunists though. If you do leave food out, or I mean, you've heard of the stories of Yosemite, how the bears, I think the black bears, they've learned how to peel windshields off of vehicles. If
nice.
You leave your food in your vehicle.
Oh yeah. So. Oh yeah, yeah. The hard, crispy exterior with a soft, squishy center.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It reminds me of the old joke about the guys who roused an angry bear. They were out in the woods, and the bear started to chase them. And the one guy stopped to take off his shoes, and you know, they were both wearing hunting boots and stuff. And the guy says, "Well, you're not gonna that ain't gonna help you outrun that bear." And he said, "I ain't got to outrun that bear. I got to outrun you."
Exactly.
Sorry, I can't resist that kind of thing, Mike.
Yep. Well, I just want to give a quick report. My wife and I went down to Southern Utah last week, and we went to the Bureau of Land Management. Had a public meeting to give input to the management of the lands that used to be Bear's Ears and used to be Grand Staircase. And so, unfortunately, they have a very abbreviated process, whereas when Bill Clinton designated Grand Staircase, the management plan for that monument, they took 3 years to develop the plan, and they sought input from many, many different realms, the local area, Salt Lake, Denver, the surrounding big suburban areas. Whereas what Trump is doing now, they're developing the management plans for Bears Ears and Grand Staircase. And they're doing it on a very short time frame, and they're only seeking the input from the very most local people around those monuments. So when we went into the meeting, I think the day or two before we went in, I had listened to your, I think you talked about being at the Kroger where the guy had his freedom protector.
Yeah.
So when we went into that meeting, all the cowboys, all the local ranchers, and they're all very angry, anti-government type cowboys. They all had their freedom protectors on. So It's pretty strange. I mean, like I said, I grew up in Montana, and we live here in Washington, where I've never been around open carry. So, I mean, I grew up around guns a little bit in Montana, but didn't see them all over the place. So we entered this room with all these cowboys, and they're all packing heat on their waistbands. And so my wife and I, you could tell the people that are like the pro-monument people, you know, none of us are armed. You can just, I mean, you're probably in your area too, right? The river raptor types and the hiker types.
And the climbers, you know, they don't walk around packing heat. Because,
no.
You know, suspended 300 feet up from a cliff face and you run across a rattlesnake. You know, no, a pistol's not really an answer.
Exactly. So I don't know what all these guys are packing heat. If a stray wolf wandered in, or I had a vision if somebody would have yelled something like I don't know, like Indian or something like that, if they all drew, and maybe they'd all blow each other away or something.
Yeah, but you know, there's always the crossfire. Let me ask you a couple of questions, if I may, that just occurred.
We're down there, and they're going to carve up that land. They want to open it up to resource extraction, and they want to open it up to off-road vehicles. And I think a lot of it is the Utah politicians, they just want to have local control where they take it away from the feds so they can develop it and exploit it to, you know, to whatever they can make a buck on.
Well, I think I sent you a link with a couple of maps in it that shows pretty clearly where the resource extraction areas are. And those were very, very helpful.
Yeah, exactly.
But I wanted to ask you a question based on what you've observed so far, Mike. You know, among other people, Patagonia, led by Yvonne Chouinard, they filed suit against the federal government and against the decision of the Department of Interior and, by extension, Trump.
Right.
To stop this, are the officials in Utah just going ahead as though no lawsuit is in place?
Yeah, they're ignoring all the different lawsuits right now, and I think there are two big groups that were suing two different lawsuits, and I think they've tried to combine it into one. But yeah, they're pushing ahead, irregardless of the judicial situation. So. I think they're just trying to get as much water under the bridge to make it like it's a done deal as possible. So,
well, I don't necessarily know what the legal strategy is, but it seems like maybe they pursued injunctive relief and were turned down. I don't know.
It's one thing that's interesting. There was an editorial in the Wall Street Journal back in, and it might have been, or maybe it was the New York Times. It was written by John Yoo, and he gave a legal justification for rescinding a monument. So I thought it was ironic that George W. Bush's, the lawyer that justified torture, is now also justifying the abolition of the Antiquities Act.
Yeah, what that guy's doing, sitting at a noble law school like Bolt Hall in Berkeley, simply astonishes me. But you know, you mentioned the 3-year process of coming up with the plan for Grand Staircase. That was what, 1995 that Clinton did that?
Yeah, I believe the.
So it took him till roughly 1998, and then you know, for all of the damage that the Bush administration did, they really didn't make a lot of noise about it, did they?
No, Utah is kind of the ground zero for the privatization of public lands movement, and so from the local county commissioners all the way up to Orrin Hatch, they've had a thorn in their side on all the federal public land. So it's been like in their craw for years to try to act on this, and I think Trump. For some reason, G.W. Bush, he didn't act on it. He didn't pursue this. But I think with Trump, they realized they had a useful idiot that would, satisfy their wish. Yeah.
And the question that occurs to me, Mike, is, you know, Orrin Hatch is so old he farts dust. And so, and I don't think he's eaten beans and weenies. So it's kind of a cui bono situation. I mean, is there anybody directly in government who Utah State or the federal government who directly stands to benefit, or is this just a sort of naked political patronage for the extraction industry?
I think it's a little bit of both, because the state legislator, you heard of him, Mike Noel.
Oh yes,
he owns land with, he had an inholding right on the edge of Grand Staircase, and then he also owns land kind of that was right outside the boundary. So they said he could benefit himself, and he's getting some flack because he didn't reveal that. So it was definitely a conflict of interest. And they're trying to run a pipeline from the Colorado River into southern Utah to where they could feed more development. And I know he's involved in that, and I think the water pipeline was possibly going to cross his land. So I think there were definitely some local politicians that were going to benefit from it. And then I'm pretty sure the county commissioners from the various counties, they probably have schemes to profit individually from the exploitation of those places. Yeah.
Well, nothing good will come of it. And I really appreciate you and your wife going down there, and because that's a haul from Washington State down there, and the fact that you've got a commitment to it and are willing to do that just speaks volumes, yeah. And it makes me really just really grateful.
It's not all work, because we're going to go hiking in the canyons down there too, and explore a lot. So there's definitely some benefit.
Hike the canyons while the canyons are still there.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But it's also like Liz Cheney, she's got a bill to roll back the wilderness study areas in Wyoming. And then one of the Montana senators, Steve Daines and Greg Gianforte, remember the guy that beat up the reporter?
Yeah.
The day before the special election, they both have bills in Congress to roll back the wilderness study areas in Montana. So there's definitely these Republicans are definitely acting on their platform to privatize public land and to roll back the protection. So yeah, I've just tried to be a voice. I've been trying to be a voice to inform people and whatnot. So.
Well, you're doing an excellent job of it, and I'm glad we did it. I mean, you wrote me a detailed email, and I appreciate it. I appreciated it because it educated me. But I think the information carries more force when in the format of this phone call than it does if I just sat and read your email. And I'm really glad you decided to make the call. And as I've said to you privately. I really want to figure out a way to bring the health aspects of this into some degree of currency for folks out there. I don't know if I don't know if people are talking about it. And I don't mean to diminish any aspect of it. I have a tremendous degree of respect for the people who talk about the poisoning of the water, but all of this science that we've had that's developed out of the mountaintop removal area. That is specifically transferable to anywhere basically that they're blasting, especially when blasting in sandstone. Right. All the science here points to that being not waterborne illness, but airborne pollutants being the greatest culprit. And whoever's downwind of that is going to have themselves a real ugly little cancer cluster in about 10, 15 years. And people will be sitting around saying, why? And what I would encourage people to do is start monitoring your air now so that you can establish a baseline of what your air has in it, even though you can't see it, what your air has in it now. And
what's there now,
And then once the blasting and everything starts, you're going to see that air change. And it will not change for the better.
Right. Right. Okay.
And I've been trying to find who I should talk to in that regard. So if you figure any of that out, then by all means, please let me know.
Yeah, I will. I'll pass that. I think I have a couple people. Definitely.
And
I think it came out about a week ago about isn't Think Progress about a town in West Virginia?
Minden.
And they were talking about, yes. Yeah. I read that one today.
Yeah, Minden is a slightly different story because Minden, there is a lot of groundwater effect because it was a toxic waste dump. You know, kind of what you get with a place like Love Canal.
Okay.
But again... A guy from the Trump administration was supposed to show up to listen to locals' concerns. He just blew the meeting off. Who cares, right? They're all going to be dead soon anyway. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And I could rant and rave and scream and holler, but it's not gonna make the Trump administration do the right thing. And frankly,
right.
And this is the most painful part of it, Mike. How many poisoned people are there in West Virginia walking around in maggot hats?
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
It's kind of like that dumbass who scratched his initials on the arch there, that you made me aware of. Yeah. You know, they come from Idaho and as I commented on the post on Facebook, they might as well have had their picture taken with their maggot hats on.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Come on, Marveline. Let's go down to a precious geological artifact and carve a heart with our initials in it and the year and the number 18. Come on, baby.
Yeah.
Well, and you got your three impressionable little children right there watching? Oh, great.
What?
And
it turns out they actually have seven kids. And then they actually, in Hawaii last year, they harassed some turtles. So they're getting in trouble for that, too. On a beach. There are some turtles.
Who the hell are? I mean, I don't mean just these people, but, you know, what the?
Yeah.
Let's go on vacation and screw with the turtles? Really?
I guess, yeah. Well, it turns out I think the guy owns a manufacturing company in Idaho Falls.
Yeah, they make trailer hitches.
Yeah, they make trailer hitches, and I think they're really into motorized sports like motocross. So, you know, I think they're probably down in southern Utah for some kind of off-road rally or something. And it just, in my experience, the motorized crowd, they a lot of times have not all of them, I don't mean to generalize, but a lot of them kind of have disrespect for, you know, the natural being of things. And they'll drive their ORV, you know, up to a pristine alpine meadow, or there's some places in Montana that have really been trashed by off-road vehicles. Some pretty beautiful wild places where there used to be a lot of wildlife, and the ORVs show up and you know, now the wildlife's all gone.
Yeah, I've been out deer hunting on. Now, remember, I was never any good at it, but I've been out deer hunting on beautiful November Appalachian mornings, and you're so far out in the country that, you know, there's no noise of modern at all. It's just you and nature. And you get really quiet, and you can hear the forest come to life. And I'll never forget one morning that was happening, and, you know, little scramblings, your little birds are beginning to chirp. And then all of a sudden you hear, blam, 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 blam. A guy hunting with a Remington semi-automatic rifle, deer hunting on the first day of deer season. Like, you know, thanks. Yeah. Because you knew that your spot, you know, you could stalk till hell froze over, but your spot was done for the day because there wasn't going to be a deer within 50 miles.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, your portrayal there, as you say, the fear of the mind, you nailed that one perfect.
Oh, jeez.
So, but yeah, that's kind of a universal, whether you're Montana or Utah or West Virginia, that, you know, those motors, they kind of destroy it for you.
Oh, there's.
I always figure.
And around here, they're vehicles. I mean, people run up and down the roads on them. It's illegal to be on the roads in them, but, you know, laws, we don't need no stinking laws.
Right, exactly.
And the other thing that I think I mentioned to you, and I want to mention to everybody else, there is a great profile in GQ of Yvon Chouinard.
I'm gonna read that tonight. Yep.
Yeah, he's 80 years old, and he's the motivating force behind Patagonia, stepping out there and getting active. And it's a great piece of writing, and you really do gain a lot of respect for Patagonia and their leadership. And I put it on my Facebook page. And one of the best stories out of that is how he fell in love with his wife, to whom he's been married for like decades. They fell in love when she was working in a national park and waitressing at the same time, and she saw some women throw some trash like a beer can or something out of a car, and she said, "Pick that up," and they told her to fuck off. Now, this is like the 1950s or something. Well, she, by God, walked up and ripped the license plate off their car and took it to the park ranger. And Yvonne Chouinard said, that's when I knew I was in love.
That's her, yeah. Huh. Interesting. That's great. That's a good story. Also, yeah, that's on my reading list here, probably this evening. So.
It's not a long read, but it's a good one. Well, Mike, thanks so much for calling in. I'm so very glad that you did, and I really appreciate the update. And again, thank you for, you know, for those of us who can't go to those meetings, thank you for being there and carrying our voices to it.
Yeah, but yeah, if you ever have a chance to make it down that way, I think with your archaeology background, with all the petroglyphs and pictographs and whatnot, you'd probably really appreciate it.
Oh, I look at the photos and just stare at them, trying to imagine the majesty and the brilliance of the life and the led to it. And
yeah, it's
I showed them to Agnes, and she's like, and that's under threat. And I said, yeah, that's under threat. She said, bastards.
Yeah, that's what they want to destroy. Right. Hey, I want to give a quick plug. We started watching a series on AMC called The Terror. But it's, remember Tobias Menzies from The Outlander?
Yeah, yeah.
He's in it, and it's about the Royal Navy expedition up into the Arctic Circle in the 1840s. But I think tonight the fourth one's on. It's by AMC, and it's about these guys on these old ships, the Terror and the Erebus. But I think the Horn community would probably appreciate that. It's got great acting and great dialogue, and the production value is really good. And the dialogue of these naval officers, and I think most of the actors are English on the show, but it's really powerful.
Oh, I'll be all over it. I saw a promo for it, and I thought, really, another zombie thing? But I sorted it out. It's the name of the ship involved. And Tobias Menzies is a magnificent actor.
Yeah, and there's a couple other guys on the show too that are really powerful actors too. So it's good. Yeah, maybe check it out.
I think that may be this evening's post-program watching. Thanks for bringing that to our attention, Mike. I really appreciate it.
Okay.
All right, you have yourself a good night.
Cool. All right. You
later.
Too, Bob.
Bye. Okay,
have a good night.
Thanks.
Good night. Bye.
Bye. Mike in Cascadia ringing in. He always always brings good content when he calls. And that's some, well, I love activism like that. And I thank you, Mike. Thank you. So it's time to get out of here. I ran over a little bit. I'm sorry. But I really wanted, like I said, I really wanted to get that conversation in. So we'll close, you know, $366 to finish the week. And if we keep fundraising this week, we can have 2 weeks of fundraising free radio. We'll see how that all plays out. Thanks to everybody who listens to the program. Thank you to all of you who support the program. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to our chat room moderators. Remember, the new chat room's accessible to everybody now. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa for HeadOn.live. Thanks, John Fox, for working on HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, trying to get it back up and running. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.